Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 52.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Rick Bowen. Rick is the owner and director of Chagrin River Consulting in Chagrin Falls, Ohio. Rick's route and his path to working in lean and continuous improvement started with a mining company in Eastern Kentucky teaching miners about safety and has progressed over the years in helping steel mills, hotels, and manufacturing companies implement lean manufacturing initiatives and developing growth-oriented strategic plans. Rick's humility shows through on his LinkedIn profile where he says, "I'd like to say I've been successful at helping the companies that have hired me, both as an employee and as a consultant. And in a way, I have. But really, it was the managers and the employees of those companies that were successful. I just got them pointed in the right direction, gave them some tools and ideas, and facilitated their conversations about making needed changes. They did all the heavy lifting." I'm pleased to introduce our guest today, Rick Bowen. Well, Rick, we briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do, and how lean or continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Sure, Chris. And I come to it maybe from a little bit of a different direction than others you might have had on the podcast. My background is in, I got a BA in psychology from a university in North Carolina, and then went to work for a coal company, and then a steel making company, and then a hospital. And along the way, got a master's in organizational development and analysis. So I come at it from that side. Some of other practitioners often come at it from the industrial engineering or manufacturing engineering side. But I come at it, again, kind of more from the people, from the social side of it. And so what I've paid a lot of attention to is the piece of it that I think everybody agrees is the central piece of it, and that is the culture change piece of lean. As I mentioned, I worked in the coal industry, the steel industry, healthcare industry, hospitality industry, and then as a consultant having my own firm, mostly small manufacturing.
Okay. All right. Well, Rick, my dad lives in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, so I'm Tar Heel Blue as well.
There you go.
I love it when these moments of serendipity show up. Where are you talking to us from today?
I live in Akron, Ohio, the rubber capital of the world, as we all know, and Goodyear still is here. I've lived in Cleveland Heights and Lakewood, several places in Northeast Ohio since the early 80s. People sometimes hear my Southern accent and say, "Oh, welcome to Ohio." I tell them, "Well, I've been here 40 years, but thanks anyway."
Good deal. Well, before we get started in the interview, we always ask that our guests share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite leader. And can you tell us what your quote is and why you chose it?
Oh, okay. I guess my favorite is, and I think this is attributed to Peter Drucker. I'm not certain of that, but I think it is. And it's culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I found that to be true, that strategy only works to the extent that the culture enables and supports the strategy.
That's great advice. I think anybody that's done this work for any amount of time can understand that it doesn't matter how many great laid plans you have on paper, that if the culture that you're trying to install that plan into is not accepting or ready, you'll meet a demise for your project or your program from that standpoint.
Right. Well, one of the challenges is, of course, and I think I mentioned as we were getting ready, Chris, that I teach over here at Kent State University, and that's what I teach, organizational behavior, and I teach them how to assess and manage the cultures when they are managers, because what I try and get across is that a large part of sustained strategic competitive advantage is going to depend on their culture. And that's true of, as we know, of lean. If you aren't paying attention to the culture and changing the culture of your organization, you're just not going to be successful with your lean implementation.
Well, I don't have an industrial engineering background either. My degree is in criminal justice, and
oh, wow.
which But you really think about, I use it. People say, well, how do you ever use it? I use it every day. It's really applied behavioral sciences. It's understanding people. It's people from all walks of life. So I think while the industrial engineers that are listening, they have a different perspective and advantage in the work that we do. I also think the folks like us that have learned the people side of the business and from a psychology and applied psychology, we have a different advantage when it comes to leading continuous improvement.
Right.
Do you think?
Yes. Yes. And I find sometimes the folks, I don't mean to generalize about engineers, but folks not in the backgrounds that you and I have, think, well, all the culture change piece and all the social piece of it is just common sense. And my response to that, and I get that from my students and clients sometimes, well, that side of it's just common sense. And my response to that is, if it's just common sense, how come everybody's not already good at it?
That's a great response. You know, common sense, isn't that all that common?
Right.
Is the I guess the quote that goes with that. Well, one of my goals for this podcast, Rick, is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences. Can you share with them why you chose this profession or how?
Well, I can imagine my path has been like a lot of your listeners, and in that it's not so much that I one day said, by gosh, I'm going to be a lean consultant, so much as it is you are working at organizations, working with organizations, and found that lean concepts and principles kind of matched what you were already doing. It kind of gave a name and some nomenclature around what was already going, what you were already doing and what was already going on in the organization. And that's how I came to, that's kind of how I came into it. I mentioned the coal company, and my job there was what OSHA is to the environments of many of your listeners. MSHA is to the mining industry, and MSHA required that certain training be done, requires that certain training be done. All miners have to have yearly retraining. And I got hired to do that job, even though I knew nothing about coal mining. And so my first classes, I remember some of my first classes were with surface miners. And they ran equipment, you know, dozers and graders and so forth, big trucks. And I remember kind of what, you know, remembered back to my days in college when I learned, involved the people in the improvement. And I just asked, okay, who here runs a dozer? Who? And finally, somebody raised his hand. And I said, tell us what you do to run that dozer safely. And after kind of looking around a minute or two at each other, like, you know, this is not the way our classes usually start. He started getting into it. Well, here's what I do before I start it up. And we went through an 8-hour day like that. Okay, now who runs a grader? I didn't need to be the expert. The experts were already in the room. Okay. And I took the same thing. Then I went from the coal company to the steel company, knew nothing about steel making, but was facilitating what we call better way teams, what got, you can think of as quality circles. And it was United Steelworkers, the union men and women on those teams that came up with safety improvements, quality of work life improvements, quality of product improvements. And I still, today, when I go into an organization, sometimes folks will ask me, well, what do you know about our industry? What do you know about our business? And my response is, I don't know anything about your business, but you do. And my job's going to be pretty much just to facilitate conversations among the experts that are already here in the building.
That's a great perspective. I think I had a guest recently on the podcast, and he says, I'm not the expert. What I am is I'm the guide. I'm the person that helps kind of shine the way for your experts to be able to share with each other the experience. I don't have all the answers. You have the answers. My job is to kind of help you unlock them.
Right.
And I thought that was just a really great perspective on the work that we do with lean and continuous improvement.
And that's not to say that as practitioners, we don't bring anything to the table. There's kind of a co-creation process. There are things that I know or that I can bring to the table about good manufacturing practice and good, process improvement. And we'll, get a chance to talk about maybe how my views of lean, I don't say differ from, but compare with others. An example is I talk to my clients a lot about flow of material, flow of information through the process. And so that's kind of something that I might bring to the table that's new to them. So I'm bringing an idea of better, more consistent flow. They're bringing to the table the expertise based on, in lots of cases, decades of experience. You put those two together, you get improvement to the processes.
Well, Rick, can you share with the story about what you consider maybe your biggest career setback with lean or continuous improvement, any pitfalls or mistakes that you went through, and what you learned with it? If you could share that story with our listeners, that would be great.
I can imagine, like a lot of your listeners, it's kind of like, wow, okay, which one? I guess what I'd point to is now, of course, I'm on my own, got my own business, and something that I've thought about, and I've talked with other practitioners who have their own businesses, is how do you pick the client, so to speak? How do you pick the client that is going to stick with the process? Because one of the things we all know is if it were simply a matter of implementing the tools, every manufacturer in the nation would already be lean. And yet, I think there is still that notion that, well, we'll hire somebody, either full-time person, or we'll hire a consultant, and they'll teach us some tools that we've read about in these books, and gosh, we'll be lean. And you know, and the listeners know, and I know that doesn't work. And so coming back around to kind of pitfalls or whatever, I have not always chosen clients well. And so sometimes I had a client one time. One of the first things I do when I'm helping a client is, okay, we get talking to leaders about, we're going to pick some metrics. We're going to use those metrics to tell us as we review them, are things getting better, staying the same, or getting worse as a result of our lean initiative? I couldn't even get them to pick metrics. So, and it never went anywhere. and that's one of the very early stages. So, that could lead to a lot of discussion. Well, Rick, did you introduce it right? Or was it not a good match? But that would be an example. I've had a client or two that just got to first base, maybe to second base, couldn't get all the way around home, much less finish the inning and finish the game.
So when you couldn't get them to commit to an improvement metric or, I guess the translation for folks would be, if they're not a consultant internally in that chartering process where you're chartering the project and in the program or the improvement, how did you handle their lack of metrics? Did you just kind of power through it and then kind of flail a little bit, or did you back up and say, no, you're not ready. I need, this is not the time. How did you handle that?
I've typically done more the former than the latter, and then, try and power through it and think of another door to go through or another window to climb through. And sometimes when all of those doors and windows are closed or there are barriers in front of them, as sometimes happens, and then later on, I'll be thinking, I wish I had done just what you're saying, Chris, is at the point and say, this is not working. Until you get, your senior leadership team head around some of these basic concepts. And one of them is we have to, we do need to measure what we do. You're not ready. So, I kind of done the former, sometimes wish I had done the second one.
Well, for folks that are listening to the podcast here, the nugget to take away is that continuous improvement work is not improvement that you do to someone. It's something that you do with someone. You know, and people can't, you can't delegate, a leader cannot delegate continuous improvement. They have to be actively engaged in it. So if you don't have that buy-in and you power through it, you could create a situation where people maybe have a bad taste in their mouth about future improvement efforts. So be careful, I guess, is the advice I would give. Rick, do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's, it's good to have discussion about buy-in to what. Done some, you know, written a number of articles over the years, and one here recently that's on the Industry Week website. And it's about the idea that if you go into lean and what you're buying into is the notion that you're going to cut costs, you will mess the initiative up. You're likely to fail at it. Okay. The buy-in has to be around, we are going to engage all our employees in the mission of adding value for our customers. And the way we're going to do that is going to lower our cost structure overall, because we will have smoother, more consistent flow. And that means less waste and less delays and so forth. But that's what the buy-in has to be around. So I think sometimes folks say, yeah, I'm bought in, but what they're bought in is, can you reduce my costs? It's the wrong buy-in.
Well, can you share with us kind of the moment where you realized that this is what you were supposed to do when it came to lean or continuous improvement? Kind of that aha moment in your journey.
Boy, that's, you know, I might change the question a little bit when I kind of came to the aha about what lean was all about and how to get it across to folks. And I'm kind of springboarding from what I was just saying about cost reduction and buying into it. As I mentioned, I worked for a steel operation here in town when I first moved to Cleveland, and then left there and went on to other organizations. Well, a few years ago, I was back there as a consultant, and we were going to be doing a process map, something of a value stream map, not from supplier to customer, but for part of the mill. And had some United Steelworkers in there and some engineers and supervisors all in the room. We're going to do this process map. And one of the engineers who I'd gotten to know a little bit, he said, before we get started on this, can you tell me, nobody's ever really given me a good definition of lean. I'm still unclear as to what lean's all about. And so I said, well, here's my view of it. And I asked the group, I said, okay, when a customer calls and says they want, you know, steel, a lot of steel of a certain metallurgy and certain specifications, what do we quote them as terms of delivery lead time? And they said, 12 to 14 weeks. And I said, and I bet you hit that all the time, don't you? And they laughed. And they said, no, it's generally 18 to 20 weeks, has been as long as 32 weeks. And I said, okay, thinking about lean, let's imagine that you can hit that 12 to 14 weeks all the time and you don't take a nickel out of your production costs. Would that be a benefit to the organization? And they said, absolutely. You know, we would acquire sales that we don't have now, just the ability to promise and deliver on that. I said, now let's take it a little farther. Suppose we get so good at what we're doing through continual improvement and collaboration that instead of 12 to 14 weeks, we can promise and deliver on an 8-week lead time. Would that make a difference? And we're not taking a nickel out of our costs. Would that provide a benefit to the organization? They said, we'd control the market. We'd have more sales than we know what to do with. And so that was it, kind of the light bulb went off. I said, you know, I thought, this is a good way of explaining it. and obviously I kind of thought of some of those things beforehand, but I'd never kind of put it together that way. And I've talked about that instance a lot. And that's it. If you can deliver customer value even if you don't take a nickel out of your cost, you will have a strategic advantage in the marketplace. Happily, the other thing happens too. You do reduce your cost structure, but it's that delivering customer value that's more important.
I think the way that that was explained to me was in my manufacturing history. I won't name the product to protect the folks here, but it was, if I were to order this widget from you, how long would it take from the time I placed the order until I received it? It's like, 3 to 4 weeks. Okay. How long does it take you to make a widget? Like, if you just started from, going and getting all the items that you needed, making it, testing it, proving it, whatever the requirements were. Oh, it's like, probably we can do, 9 in a day. Right. So if you can make 9 every day, why does it take me 4 weeks to get my widget when like it seems like I could get a widget in, 9 hours?
Right.
Yeah. We've got delays, materials. I mean, there's all the different stuff that goes into it. And what I realized was I was just kind of listing out all the waste in our process,
right,
of why. There's an element of this where, you're trying to close your lead time to your cycle time. But when you do that, people feel like they enjoy coming to work. They enjoy knowing that they won for the day. They feel like they're doing meaningful work that adds value to the lives of others.
Right, right. And you're mentioning there meaningful work. One of the things that I usually when I'm working with a client, I start off with workplace organization and visual management. And there are a variety of several reasons for that. And as I'm working with supervisors and managers and employees around those two things, workplace, it's usually called 5S, workplace organization and visual management. The thing that I'm talking to senior leadership about is, how Lean supports their overall strategy. And what I tell them is, I want us to get to the point where if you go out on the shop floor and ask, tell me what that shadow board over there has to do with our overall strategy, that employee can say something like, well, that shadow board means I don't have to look around for my tools. The fact that I don't have to look around for my tools means my throughput is higher and my quality is better. When we have better throughput and better quality at the same cost, that means our customer is getting the product that he or she wants when she wants it. That means our market share is going up. That's why that shadow board over there is important. When everybody in the company can give an answer like that, then Lean is being done right. Then you don't see empty shadow boards around the company.
Yeah. Well, and it's the danger there is the exact opposite, that if you don't have the culture to support it, you do end up with empty shadow boards all over the place. And then you have somebody saying, well, I'm not going to do this because we tried this a few years ago and it didn't work. And so I'm not going to invest in a futile effort.
Right.
Futile, as in not in futile, like in lords and ladies and knights and whatnot. Yeah. But even though it feels that way sometimes.
Right. And all these things, here again, one of my articles in Industry Week is around the importance of conversation in Lean. And so, going back to the shadow board, the important thing wasn't the shadow board itself. The important thing was the conversation about the shadow board and how it, number one, conversations about where should it go, what should it have on it, all of these sorts of things. And then the conversations about, the ongoing utility of the shadow board and how it helps get market share. My other example of that is I had a client here in town in Cleveland that had plants around the country. And one was down in Southeast Georgia. And I had been down talking with the plant manager about the value of, and some things things they could do around visual management. And one of them was, it was a small operation. One of them was a shadow board of all their setup tools. So I went back a couple months later and was in the plant manager's office and he says, we put up that shadow board and didn't really work. I said, well, let's go out and look at it. So we go out and it's between shifts and the shadow board's empty. He says, see, they're not putting their tools back there. Plant manager's name was Chris. And I said, Chris, Did you think the shadow board was going to walk around the plant picking up the tools for you? The way this works is you come out and you look at the shadow board, and if you see it's empty, you get your supervisor and you hold a conversation about that. If you see everything on the shadow board just like it's planned, you get the supervisor and the setup guys, and you have a conversation about that. The shadow board doesn't do anything. It's your and their conversations about what goes on with that shadow board, the benefits it has, and how you sustain it, and how that shadow board is helping you improve your processes. That's the important piece of it.
Yeah, I interviewed Billy Ray Taylor, who was an executive with Goodyear on a previous episode of the podcast. And he said, whatever you walk by and accept, whether you intend to it or not, becomes the standard. Right. So if you walk by an empty shadow board and you don't say anything, you've just said that the standard is you don't have to put your tools on the shadow board.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way of putting
it. It's the same way that installing Microsoft Word on your computer will not make you a novelist or a major screenwriter. It's an instrument that reflects the behavior that goes behind it. And you got to have the right behaviors in order for it to work. Well, that brings us to a good segue to the next question. Do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you see frequently being applied or done wrong?
The first one that comes to mind is a little bit of what we're talking about here, kind of an over-reliance or a view of the tools as being kind of the important thing. And this will sound like I'm like not a fan of tax time, but if a book about lean or an article about lean mentions tax time too early, I'm not interested. Okay. And again, it's not because the concept's not important, but it's like my view is if you're getting to the tools that early, you're on the wrong track. So here again, it's not the jargon. It's not the tools themselves. They are valuable and they're important. It's the conversation and the activity and the collaboration around those tools. You know, another one, if I've been to any number of clients and I'll go in my first day and I'll see value stream maps on the wall. And I'll say, oh, you did a value stream map. And the response will be, was that what that is? Or, yeah, a consultant did that a few years ago for us, and it's been there ever since. So, again, value stream map. I've done value stream maps with teams, and they are very beneficial. But they're not the thing that provides value. It's the conversation and the collaboration and the teamwork as the value stream map is being put together and as the data is being gathered that makes the difference in the organization, not the map itself.
Great answer. Well, what do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far?
Oh, gosh. You know, here again, I'm sure like a lot of the folks on the podcast, it's like, okay, which one? Really, some of the things that we've talked about is the more I do this, the more convinced I am or the more I learn that something that I knew early on was true, and that is it's all about the culture change. The tools are straightforward. The culture change is the challenge. So that's one thing. The other thing is this that I've talked about with respect to conversation, you know, that there's, you can't train lean in. You've got to hold lots and lots of conversations. And what you've got to train your supervisors and managers in is how to hold those conversations. And that leads to things like team huddles and things like that. Another thing I've learned that I haven't yet brought up is I don't talk much about eight wastes or seven wastes or those sorts of things when I'm talking with employees. And I never really talk about efficiency or productivity. What I do talk about is, and what I ask about is, what frustrates you as you try to do a good job on behalf of the customer? What are those frustrations that you experience And when I ask employees or leads or supervisors about that, they never say, you know, I wish we had Chips Ahoy instead of Oreos in the vending machine. What they'll say is, I don't have the tools I need. I don't have the tooling I need. The material, when I get it, it's late and it's not appropriate to the task. We're treated like mushrooms. You know, these are the things they point to as their frustrations. And so I tell them, Lean then is about getting you involved in identifying and reducing or ideally eliminating those things that frustrate you. And that's probably been the best learning, is how to describe Lean to that man or woman on the shop floor who's thinking, Lean, less employees are needed. Is that what this is going to be about? No, it's going to be about identifying those things that frustrate you and getting you involved in reducing or eliminating them.
Yeah, I think most of the successful programs I've been around, it starts with just fix what bugs you. You know, you talk to teams and managers, and they say, well, yeah, we just want to go through and pick up the low hanging fruit. And like, wait, just take the basket and walk through the field and pick up the fruit that's already on the ground. Don't worry about picking anything. Let's just clean up first and take care of those things. Because I think that when you do the work right and you fix the things that bug people, what you're really doing is you're building trust. You're building right. trust that you have their best interest in mind, and that the work that they're doing is, I go back to it, it's meaningful in the sense that when Rick comes and asks me how things are, what's bugging me, and then he helps me eliminate them. Not he eliminates them for me, but he helps me in making and minimizing those frustrations. Then when you come and you ask of something that's maybe a little more difficult for them, they realize that you wouldn't ask if you didn't think it was in their best interest, because you've built that radical trust that's required right. for success with continuous improvement.
And my experience has been, everybody likes talking about their work. Everybody likes talking about the problems they have, the frustrations they have, and how to improve their work. I had a client years ago. It wasn't my own client, it was an organization I worked for. And it was a union setting, and we were having trouble getting some of the folks to join the teams. And I went out on the shop floor and talked to one guy in particular who we thought would be really beneficial to the teams. And he just wasn't joining. He said, didn't want to have anything to do with the teams. So I was talking to him on the shop floor. I said, you know, well, here's what we're talking about. You know, here's what we're talking about on the teams. And right away he said, I've been trying to tell them about that for years. And then he went into this, 15-minute explanation of what the current state was, what his ideas for fixing the current state were. And they were all good ideas. And I said, that's what we're doing. That's what we want. Mm-hmm. Here, a guy who is resistant to the process wanted to talk about the work and his ideas for improving it.
Well, Rick, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with Lean or continuous improvement?
Have in mind longer term. When I introduce myself to clients, prospective client, and if they're, that looks like the conversation's going well, I tell them, keep me around for 2 years, 24 months. Okay. And sometimes that, causes them to back up a little bit. I said, because that's how long it's going to take just to get momentum. I said, it's easy enough to teach folks the tools, but it takes that long. And I've had them say, well, we thought we could do it in three or 6 months. I said, it's just not going to happen. So I think that's what I would tell folks to be ready for, is this. And in saying that, it's not that you're not going to see any results for that length of time. Just as if you start on a diet, if you say, I want to lose 50 pounds, yeah, you lose 5 pounds if you're doing it right. You lose 3 to 5 pounds the first week and 3 to 5 pounds the second week, but you don't lose 25 pounds the first week. Lean's the same way. You'll see results, you'll see things moving in the right direction, but you won't be able to sustain it unless you stick with it over a period of time. Have that period of time in mind up front.
It's be patient and be persistent. The water cuts through the rock, not because it pounds on it, but because it constantly flows over the rock and through time wears it down. For the folks that think that you're going to be able to do continuous improvement in 3 to 6 months, Toyota is arguably probably one of the better companies that we hold out as an example of an enterprise that's devoted to continuous improvement. They've been doing it for 100 years, and they're still not where they want it. There's still opportunity. So right. It's a journey. It's not a short trip. You got to be committed to it from that standpoint.
Yeah, very true. Well, very true.
In that same vein of offering advice, what advice would you give to someone who's a little bit further along in their career in lean and continuous improvement? Maybe it's something that you heard recently that helped you. What advice would you give to that journeyman professional with lean and continuous improvement?
And we're talking about maybe a manager who's well versed in
maybe somebody. I think that's a good place, or somebody that's been doing continuous improvement for a while. Obviously, they need a different piece of advice than the person who's just starting out.
Okay, I guess my advice to them would be: is if you haven't already, start looking around and seeing what other companies and other organizations are doing, not just around lean, but around managing change, managing culture change, getting associates at all levels involved. And like I say, make it a point almost to look in other industries. You know, if you're manufacturing, find out what they're doing in healthcare. You know, if you're in hospitality, find out what they're doing. You know, if you're in for-profit, find out what they're doing in not-for-profit. You know, because that's, you know, what tends to happen is, number one, folks tend to get kind of insular, saying, you know, measuring themselves against themselves, which is appropriate. But, you know, at some point you want to look up and see what's out there and say, okay, what can we learn from others who have been doing this as long as we have? And to be sure, others who are in the same arena can be a source of learning. But others, organizations who are not in your arena at all, can lead sometimes to those really creative, innovative jumps in learning. So that'd be what I'd recommend to somebody like that.
I love that advice. I've got friends that are distance runners, and they're obviously I am not a distance runner, but my friends that are distance runners, they talk about, yeah, you're still running against the clock, but at some point, everybody can run fast. The way that you run faster is how are you training? What are you eating? What's your sleep regimen like? You know, what is your exercise and training regimen like? And they're looking at other people that are successful and trying to not copy them, but learn from their methodology and adapt it to theirs for their own personal improvement.
Right.
And I think the same thing can be said with lean and continuous improvement.
Right, right. Yeah. That's where the innovation starts coming from. Folks who are just their ways of thinking and their worldview is just very different, you know. So from, again, manufacturers go to non-manufacturing and see how they think of it. That's where the innovation is really going to.
Well, Rick, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners?
The one that I've used with clients the most is, and I bet a lot of your listeners will be familiar with it, Creating a Lean Culture, or How to Create a Lean Culture by Daniel Mann.
David Mann.
Okay.
David Mann. I actually had David on the podcast in episode 3.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
But yeah, it was. It's a great book. Help me understand why you chose that book.
Well, because it does speak to culture change, and it speaks to this issue, the whole issue of leader standard work is important in it. Whereas many lean texts and lean books, lean volumes, are kind of rehashes of the Toyota production system and the tools therein, which is valuable. I don't mean to condescend to that. But there aren't many books like David's around. Here's a template for creating those conversations that are going to be important for changing and sustaining the change in your culture. you know, he doesn't go into Kanban, doesn't go into shadow boards. Not that he avoids them, but he talks about them in the context of leader standard work, which here again, in my mind, is all about lead standard work is all about having regular conversations around these issues. It's like you got it on your schedule. Go talk to the folks doing the work. So that's
absolutely. Well, Rick, you and I both know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did and you had one with a group that you're working with, what would you typically wave your wand and try to fix first?
Boy, that is a good question. I would try and, a couple of things, and we've talked about it a little bit earlier. I'd wave a wand such that they completely forgot, completely put out of their mind, never thought that what this is really about is saving those nickels and dimes. You know, sometimes I think they, sometimes clients and folks I talk to is they know that the right thing to say is, yeah, it's about the customer, but back in there somewhere is, but it better save money, or, you know, if I could wave a wand and get rid of that. And then if I could wave a wand, kind of referring back to something else we thought of, wave a wand and have them really understand that if this was easy, everybody would already be lean. And it's not that it's arduous. It just takes, you put it well, patience and persistence. Discipline over time is the only way to make it work. So that'd be kind of my wand is, amnesia around cost cutting and short-term results.
Well, Rick, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do or if they have a question for you from something they heard today?
A couple ways. My website is www.chagrinriverconsulting.com. And Chagrin River is a real river up here in Northeast Ohio, spelled C-H-A-G-R-I-N. So www.chagrinriverconsulting.com or rbohan@chagrinriverconsulting.com. And the other thing, if they're interested in reading, I've mentioned a couple of times the articles I've written. If you go to the Industry Week website and just kind of do a search on my name, Bohan, a lot of my articles will come up and you can kind of read how I've thought about these things over the years.
Well, Rick, I'll definitely put links to your company and to your Industry Week work in the show notes page. Rick, I appreciate you taking time to talk to the podcast audience. I know I got a lot out of the conversation and I'm grateful for the work that you're doing to help people. And I am at another Tar Heel. So, the world is a good place, but thank you again, Rick.
Thank you, Chris, for inviting me. It was a lot of fun for me.
I want to thank Rick for being a guest on the podcast today. I enjoyed our conversation. I got a lot out of it and I hope that you did as well. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links to connect with Rick and how to connect with him if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to subscribe and leave a rating on the podcast in whatever channel you listen to us on. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.